Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, plan to sleep all day. He'll come to
it is The Savage Nation. We're still in Blue Monday. You're working like a slave all day. You probably work about 5 months a year so that the Obama administration can spend your money on useless tasks and feather the nest of their friends in the unions. It was the night before the election, and all through the House, not a creature was voting except for a louse. On Axelrod, NBC, and GE2, go get those illegals to send in a few. Cancel the soldiers, the sailors, and Marines. Just have the leeches hit the voting machines. Tonight's show is called The Case Against Obama. This is an election about rejecting the socialistic policies, the corruption, and the graft of the Obama administration. It is not so much an election to vote for Romney, who is himself a big government liberal Republican. No, it is an election about rejecting the socialistic policies, the corruption, and graft of the Obama administration. And I recognize many of you don't know much of the facts. I know that's a fact, that you don't know the facts. And that's because you have busy lives and you don't pay much attention to this stuff. It's like an exam. And the night before the election, maybe you turn on the radio, you know, you don't know who you're listening to in some cases. Sometimes you do. And I'm going to present over the next 2 or 3 hours the case against Obama. And the best way I can do that is giving you the facts, only the facts. And I wrote a book called Trickle Down Tyranny. I don't care if you buy it or not. It's sold very well. It's not going to change my lifestyle if one more copy sells. But I spent over 2 years writing the book. And the book is carefully documented with several hundred references on the deficits of the Obama administration. This is the second iteration of our dance with socialism. Jimmy Carter was the first. Obama was the second, but Obama was far more radical than Jimmy Carter because he was able to get away with more than Carter because he used the race issue to his advantage, hoodwinking the liberals, especially the white liberals, into the guilt trip that permitted him and his gang from Chicago to get away with virtual theft. And I'm going to prove it to you tonight. I'm going to spell it out for you. If you care to join the conversation, there's really only one question I want. I will not take any other calls. There's only one question. What policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against Obama? That's the only question I want answered. What policy, what act, what omission, what corruption, what graft convinced you to vote against Obama? Don't tell me about Romney. Romney is not God. Romney is not the salvation. Romney is not the great hope. Romney is an alternative to what we have now. And it's summarized, really, you know, they say a picture is worth a thousand words. On MichaelSavage.com, a minute before the show, my friend Peter sent me a poster on a 16-wheeler. Things could be, it's a truck near the Fort Collins Loveland Airport in Loveland, Colorado. It's a huge billboard on the side of a 16-wheeler. The picture of the anointed one. And the headline says, things could be worse. Reelect me and I'll prove it. One picture is worth a thousand words. I put it on MichaelSavage.com for you to share with your friends tonight because everything is at stake. Either we throw the bums out or the country is finished forever. You say, ah, come on, you're exaggerating. People say, well, the worst that'll happen is we'll become like Europe. I said, no, you're wrong. No, no, this is not becoming like Europe. The model is not Europe that Obama himself and his cronies are working with. The structural reality is that he's moving us towards a Chavez-like dictatorship where there's a crushed middle class that will flee the nation, except there is nowhere to flee. And so again, I'm asking you, what policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against him? Let me begin at the beginning with you. Tonight is my turn. It is a case against Obama. The book is dedicated to those who gave their lives to secure the freedom to write and read as we please. That's how I dedicated the book. And as I speak with you, Leon Panetta,
Barack Obama and David Axelrod have denied the ballots to soldiers, Marines, and airmen. The book was dedicated to those who gave their lives to secure the freedom so that I could write, I can read, and you can vote as you please. And this gang has taken away the right for God knows, tens of thousands, hundreds, we don't know, of soldiers, airmen, and Marines to vote. They rigged it so they can't vote. They rigged it so that non-citizens can vote. So let me begin at the beginning. Trickle-down tyranny is the title. Here's the first line. It's a classic. No one's ever written a better line. Nobody has beaten me in this one-liner. As a writer, I was a writer before I was a talk show host, we always sought the one good line. Here's the best line I've ever written in my 28-book career. Economies can be rebuilt, armies can be repopulated, but once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored. Nobody has ever beat Michael Savage with a line like that. And Obama has decimated the pride of the nation. He has destroyed it, almost destroyed it. I'll go on. The loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. The next president must love America. The next president must embody unequivocally everything that is good about this country going back to its founding. The next president must be the exact opposite of Barack Obama. He must be a man of high character and strong commitment to American values because he will be facing problems and issues that no U.S. leader has had to face since the years leading up to World War II. In the late 1930s, only a few years before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, our economy was still trying to recover from the Great Depression in the face of the policies of a big government president, that's Roosevelt. Our military had been depleted, and our enemies were gathering strength and threatening war on many fronts. While this was going on, our president and European leaders were hiding their heads in the sand, downplaying the threat from those enemies in much the same way Barack Hussein Obama is doing today. The Obama administration is concealing the seriousness of many problems that affect every one of us in our everyday lives. Let me explain what I mean by giving you information you won't hear from any other source. I'm Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. What policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against him? One, Obama's economic policies have caused such an enormous rise in the price of the necessities of life, listen carefully, dumb liberals, that his administration has removed energy and food prices from its financial analysis in order to avoid telling the American people just how bad inflation is. If he put back energy and food prices into the financial analysis, we wouldn't have inflation of 2 or 3%. It would be closer to what we had under Jimmy Carter, 18 to 20%. Two, the U.S. Navy, our primary military force in the 21st century, currently has the smallest number of ships we have had since the end of World War I. By the way, Romney picked that up from my book. In 1918, our Navy was comprised of 774 ships. It's down to fewer than 300 ships today. Bill Clinton decimated our military forces during the 90s, and under Barack Hussein Obama, the problem is getting worse. At best, Barack Obama will be doing nothing about these issues and the others I'm going to reveal to you here in trickle-down tyranny. In the face of this, the next president must be proud of America, willing to laugh at the lunatic fringe pushing the theory of global warming, courageous enough to take on the big bankers and the dictatorial enemies of freedom that are challenging us in every corner of the world. The next president must do nothing less than restore America to its position as the supreme military and financial power in the world. The American people have been kept in the dark about what I'm going to reveal to you in trickle-down tyranny. They've been fed an endless stream of lies. They've had to endure out-and-out thievery by the government at their expense. They've had to stand by while the administration revealed its absolute corrupt character because the press kept its mouth shut. Because of this, there is still the possibility that Barack Obama will be reelected. You heard me. Call it communism, Marxism, Leninism, socialism, collectivism. Call it whatever you like. If we don't wake up to the reality of the situation, we face another 4 years of this administration, of the takeover of our country by agents of the very enemy that we have been fighting against for more than half a century. We need to nominate and support the most electable Republican in the field, because an Obama victory in 2012 would doom this country. I mean that literally. We will very likely not survive as a free nation after 4 more years under Obama's rule, returning American foreign policy to a position of strength. I talk about Russia on page 3. I'm not going to read every word of a many-hundred-page book, okay? You remember the Star Treaty? You remember what Obama did with Russia when he abandoned the idea of installing U.S. missile defense sites in Poland and the Czech Republic that were meant to protect our European and Eastern European allies against Iranian nuclear missile strikes? It was part of Obama and Hillary Clinton's Russian reset. And what did Russia do? Russia rewarded Obama by threatening to aim its missiles at U.S. European-based missile defense systems and to withdraw from the START nuclear weapons treaty. I'll go on. I know many of you don't care about that. Let's go to the Middle East. That's something we can all pay attention to. I'm going to cover China and the threat of China and what Obama has done in his supine manner. Do you remember what he did to the Middle East? Have you taken a close look at what the Obama Middle East foreign policy has done to that region and to the global political balance since early 2011? Obama supported the ouster of Hosni Mubarak during the spring of 2011. Remember Mubarak, our friend for 40 years, the man who signed a peace treaty with Israel, the man who stabilized the largest Muslim nation on earth? In late November of that year, the Obama administration, after spending $200 million to support the overthrow of Mubarak, we saw the first democratic election in Egypt. And what were the results? The results were the radical Islamist Muslim Brotherhood, along with the conservative Salafist Party, won 67% of the seats in the new Egyptian parliament, giving supporters of government based on Sharia law a strong majority. I wrote this months and months ago before this became the news. And so we see what's going on. Democratic rule has turned what naive leftists around the world call the Arab Spring into the Arab Winter, a term I coined. I saw as though through a crystal ball what would follow Mubarak's fall. The Egyptian economy has been reduced to a trickle as tourism has dried up. Christians are an endangered species in Egypt. If the Egyptian military would stop intervening to maintain order and hand over that job to a civilian government, the mob rule that has become the norm in Cairo would look like a picnic. Utter chaos would follow, and the country would very likely sink into true anarchy. This was all because of your academic egghead president, Barack Hussein Obama. And what about China? You have any idea what China is doing? Do you know that China is not far behind Russia in challenging the United States? Do you know that the Chinese President Hin Jintao has directed the Chinese Navy to prepare for military combat? Whose military stance is based on China's claim that it owns the South China Sea and that other nations need to give up any claims to the oil and gas reserves there and to the right to use its shipping lanes without Chinese consent? That would be like Obama saying that we have a new Obama doctrine, like the Monroe Doctrine, and you're not allowed to drill, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico. But Obama did the opposite. Obama permitted foreign nations to drill in the Gulf of Mexico, and they're drilling around the clock, while he banned American companies from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. But you don't know any of this. Are you as appalled as I am at the lack of backbone displayed over and over again by our state and defense departments in the face of China's ongoing military buildup? Now, I'll pause right here. I'll give you a breather, and I'll ask you if you'd like to join the conversation on this all-important seminal evening on the Savage Nation. What policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against Barack Hussein Obama? The phone number here on the new Savage Nation is 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282. I'll be right back. It is the Savage Nation. It's the case against Obama. It's an election about rejecting the socialistic policies, the corruption, and the graft of the Obama administration. It is not so much for Romney, who is himself a big government Republican. I'll repeat that. And so I ask you again, what policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against Obama? Of my audience in the United States of America tonight, I would say most of you have made up your minds. However, there's always a large percentage of people who don't listen to talk radio, who scan it the night before to listen to both sides and make up their own mind. And I am reading from my best-selling book, Trickle Down Tyranny, which came out a few months ago, because I spent a year writing it. You'll not believe the level of corruption, the tyranny of this administration. You'll not believe what he's actually done to the structure of this nation until you actually study it. Don't read the newspapers. Newspapers are about headlines. Books are supposed to go behind the headlines. As a researcher with a doctorate from the University of California, I know how important it is to document what you say, and so I have hundreds of references in my notes for those of you who are doubting Thomas's, as I would advise you to be. I don't believe anybody. I don't believe a word anyone says. So every statement I make is backed up with documentation. Now, before I continue, I want to remind you, I was not born a conservative. I was born an immigrant son. My father, my mother voted Democrat. Everyone in my family voted Democrat. Most of them still do, because they never evolved. Like children, they're too lazy to evolve. They do what their fathers did, what their mothers did. They don't understand what's going on in this country. I evolved as I got cauterized by the liberal left in this country, when I saw how they went after the productive individuals in this country with a vengeance, and how they seem to want to victimize everybody because victims are easy to control. But that's baby talk. I want to go back to the book and continue, and I'm going to hit you some headlines. But I'm asking you again, what policy act or omission convinced you to vote against him? Reversing the Obama energy policy, I'll scan over that. Fixing the global economic mess, I'll scan over that. Cleaning up health care, you've heard enough about that. Restoring the Constitution, you've heard enough about that. Important stuff, but you've heard about it. The Savage Revolution, so I'll read that to you, because that's novel. Here's why the advice I'm giving is so important to the next president. I worry that the Republicans don't truly understand what the Obama administration is doing to America. They submitted to the left-wing inquisitions that were passed off as debates during the Republican presidential primary. You hear that? And they let themselves be attacked and destroyed by David Axelrod and the labor union cohorts who have formed mobs to perpetuate the corrupt ideology. The Republican candidates sniped at each other, destroying their own credibility as if the most important thing was which one of them got nominated. When what is really important is that we find the candidate who knows what is going on. Well, we found one, I guess, after what Newt Gingrich did to him. I would say Newt Gingrich should be excommunicated from the Republican Party. Part of the problem is this. As I've told my listeners over and over, there's no real difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. At a certain level, they've been trading eight-year presidential terms since 1980, with Republicans getting the presidency for two terms, then Democrats for two. At bottom, it doesn't matter which party you belong to. The important thing is to know that Obama is not from either party. Obama is a party unto himself. It's an election about rejecting his socialism. I continue now with the case against Obama, because this is an election about rejecting the socialistic policies, the corruption, the graft, and the tyranny of the Obama administration. It is not so much for Romney, who is himself a big government Republican. And as I explained to you many times, and in my book, A Trickle-Down Tyranny, Obama is a naked Marxist who is out to take over the United States as part of a larger plan to establish a collectivist world government. He's appointed leftist academics with no real-world experience to make every important decision, from foreign policy to economic strategy to energy to the military. And how'd that work out for you leftists? How'd that work out for you? The Arab world blew up. The country is bankrupt. The Energy Department is a scam to give money to cronies through the false solar projects. He has decimated the military, demoralized the military. He was commander-in-chief when 22 Navy SEALs were put onto a single Chinook helicopter. They all died, but the media won't tell you about that. He's bowed down to foreign leaders around the world. He's determined to see the U.S. given to the leftist and Islamist forces that are gaining power in the Middle East, Europe, and South America, where his foreign policy has focused on abandoning our former friends and making new friends of Islamist and communist dictators. I'll go on. Barack Obama. We face a threat that goes far beyond any we've faced since before the fall of the Soviet Union. Barack Obama must be defeated in 2012 if our country is to survive as a free nation. Obama has made a pact with the devil, and he's dragging the American people down with himself as he makes allies of the Islamist dictators in the Middle East and tries to ingratiate himself with the Russian, Chinese, and South American communist regimes. It's time for the Savage Revolution. I'm the only one explaining to you that Obama is in the process of taking our power to govern ourselves out of the hands of the American people and turning it over to a world government run by people who hate the United States and the freedom it represents. Along with the Tea Party, which the Republican Party seems determined to damn into irrelevancy, I'm telling you that you've got to take back control of the country. You've got to take what I'm giving you tonight in the Savage Nation and translate it into action at the voting booth tomorrow. I explained to you that we have a chance to vote a naked Marxist president out of office. My work tonight exposes the entire leftist mafia that controls the courts, the schools, and the economy. The savage revolution will enable us to drive them out of power permanently. They will still be here, but I'm making sure they'll no longer be able to hide in the shadows, peddling their influence indirectly affecting policy. They'll never again have the power to change the United States radically over a short time, as Obama has done. This can only happen if the message of the savage revolution is carried by the Republican candidate. The savage revolution will be built on a return to America's core values, a reestablishment of the Constitution as the basis of American law. It will mean that America once again asserts itself militarily and economically as the most powerful nation on earth, committed to standing against the tyrannical forces of radical Islam and the radical left. The savage revolution will mean developing policy for the good of the American people based on legitimate science and conservative economic principles. It will be characterized by enlightened regulation designed not to restrict American enterprise but to encourage it. We must demand from our next president nothing less than a commitment to these values, policies, and actions, and the restoration of American honor that has been so diminished under Barack Obama. If Barack Obama is elected for another four-year term, he'll be president for life. He'll be the new Hugo Chavez. He'll do away with the two-term limit and win the 2016 election with 90% of the vote. We have less than 6 months to make sure this doesn't happen. Well, now we have one night to make sure this doesn't happen, don't we? And so I'm going to continue tonight with the case against Obama. This is one man's opinion. Chapter 2 is Tyranny of a Naked Marxist Presidency, and I'll go into that in a moment. It's from my voluminous book, Trickle-Down Tyranny, which was on the New York Times list for many weeks. Many of you never heard of it. That's because the media will not have any exposure of Michael Savage. And yet my loyal listeners know who I am very well. It's time now to hear from some of my loyal listeners. What policy act or omission convinced you to vote against Obama? Let's begin on KSFO, Clarence and Modesto. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I have two issues. The first for me was the Keystone Pipeline.
Yes.
Obama, if he was serious about creating jobs, lowering gas, lowering natural gas, he would have been at that pipeline christening it with a bottle of Dom.
Now, why did Obama not permit the Keystone XL pipeline to be built from Canada to New Orleans? I mean, excuse me, from Canada into the United States. You know the reason, but give it to the audience. I know the reason.
Well, of course. He's not interested. He's not interested in lowering our gas prices. He's not interested in jobs, not private industry jobs.
No. But let me move on. I'll answer the question that you raised it, but you don't have the answer. The reason Obama vetoed the XL pipeline is twofold. One, in order to promote the fraudulent green energy jobs, green energy scams that he has become famous for. Billions of dollars given to cronies for fraudulent solar companies, and we'll name them later on. But there's another reason. His good friend, Warren Buffett, the nice old man who pretends that he is not really rich, the richest man on earth, or one of them, Warren Buffett did not want the Keystone XL pipeline to bring oil into America through a safe, secure pipeline without the need for ships, trucks, or trains. You know why? Because Warren Buffett owns the rail lines that currently carry Canadian oil into the American heartland. It's that naked. It is that naked, but you can't accept that because most of you believe in Santa Claus. Most of you believe in Santa Claus, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck. You believe in Snow White. And you don't want to believe that men are that greedy, that nakedly greedy, and that they can control a president. You don't want to accept that. But you go to a movie, and if a liberal does the movie, then it's real to you. If Martin Scorsese does it, and it's an evil Republican who's that corrupt, then you can buy it, sure. But if it's a corrupt Democrat, doesn't happen. See, that's how it works. So, what turned you against this man? When did you see through him? 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282, okay? Orlando, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. What did it for you? What turned you against Obama?
Hi, Savage. Good to hear you back on the radio. And I just wanted to say the shutting down the space program with NASA has really upset me. When the space program was built, it was built to build the morale of the country during hard times. And it almost seems unpatriotic to me as an American to shut down a program that was, in my opinion, pretty successful at the time of shutting it down.
That is correct. But Obama destroyed NASA for another reason. Do you know that we now have to put our astronauts on Russian shuttles and pay for the seats? Do you know that? I'm sure you do know that, right?
Oh, yes. I've seen it on the news, and it's kind of...
Do you know that our astronauts are now flying on the back of the bus? He's turned them into second-class astronauts?
Yes, sir.
Now, why did he do that? He did it for the same reason. Leftists have long sought to diminish American military power. It's because he wanted our enemies to gain an advantage in space so that we would not be so militaristic. Not quite so militaristic that his academic lunatic friends at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the other institutions of lower learning would respect him so that America becomes a weakened nation, sort of the Portugal of our time. And Obama gets the credit for having cut this nation into a gelding, to be quite specific. Obama has gelded the military, if you get the gist of the story. But again, with a little help from his friends. No, he doesn't get high with a little help from his friends. No, he gets by with a little help from his friends to take advantage of the Beatles tune. Yeah, he gets by with a little help from his friends at NBC and CBS and CNN and MSNBC. He gets by with a lot of help from his friends. You look at the polls. Can you believe what they've done? Can you believe that they've been loading, top-loading these polls with D plus 6, D plus 8? You know what that means? Does anyone know what that means? I know what it means. Do you know what it means? All the polls are showing Romney winning, except a few which show a very close one. And they're all top-loaded with more Democrats by 6 percentage points or 8 percentage points than Republicans. This is how naked these communists in the media have become, these stooges. These stooges, I have nothing but contempt for them. Every poll is showing Romney surging. Gallup, ABC, Washington Post, Rasmussen, Romney is surging. And so we all fear only one thing. We fear the following. Obama should have been impeached when he granted amnesty to at least 1.3, it's probably closer to 3.1 million illegal aliens, giving them instant citizenship under the fraudulent moniker of Dreamers, the Dream Act. How many of them do you think will be voting in this election? You know the Democrats have worked around the clock to make certain that illegal aliens can vote by prohibiting voter ID. Now, why would anyone prohibit voter ID? What sane person would say, no, we don't want voter ID? Do you need ID to go into a nightclub? Yes. Do you need ID to drive a car? Yes. But you don't need ID to vote? Why not? Like when I go to vote tomorrow, I'm going to show them my license, and I want the little old communist lady to say, oh, no, don't show me that. And I'll say, why don't you demand it of everyone? I do it every year. They get nervous. They almost want to call the police. I want you tomorrow to tell the wobblies in there that you want voter ID, and you want it now. I've seen busloads of illegals being brought to polls. I've gotten reports of them in Minnesota of Somalis being bussed from voting place to voting place. Do you know that or don't you know that? You're dealing with the most corrupt machine in American history. Let's say modern American history. Maybe it was worse before the Civil War. I wouldn't know. I wasn't here. But I've never seen anything quite like this. And they get away with it for a number of reasons. Mainly because people are asleep, drugged, partying, dancing, stoned. I don't know what they are. The show, I know what it is. It's 855-400-SAVAGE, 400-7282. What policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against Obama? Tonight we're doing one thing only, which is the case against Obama. It's our last chance. Tomorrow is the election. I'll be on the air with you right through the election. Do you actually think it's going to be resolved as it normally should be in the evening? You know it won't. You know that the corrupt Democrats are going to challenge it as long as they can. Delay, 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 deny, deny, deny. Sue, sue, sue. Lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. Sue, sue, sue. Sue, 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 because I'm a lawyer. I'm a Democrat lawyer. I went to law school. I'm a lawyer. That's what's coming in this country. That's what's coming. I don't know. When I was a kid, there was one election day. My father took a morning off from work, and he went and voted. Usually it was raining or snowing. How did it happen that you now have absentee ballots, mail-in ballots, talk-in ballots, walk-in ballots, freezer ballots, microwave ballots. I've never seen anything like this. I feel as though I'm living in a South American banana republic. Whatever happened to Election Day? Who decided that it's okay to mail them in a month ahead, 2 weeks ahead, 3 weeks ahead? And who's counting your votes? As I disclosed in Trickle Down Tyranny, six states have outsourced the counting to a socialist country, and a socialist company in Spain. That's right. It happened right under your eyes. Owned by a group that includes George Soros. That's right. Your vote is being counted by George Soros' minions. Six states have outsourced the counting to this company. It's spelled out in Trickle Down Tyranny. Now, don't expect confirmation in your newspaper. They'll deny it. But I have the data. It's in my book. The case against Obama continues when I return right here on The Savage Nation. It is The Savage Nation, Last Chance Saloon, the case against Obama. It's an election about rejecting the socialistic policies, the corruption, and the outright graft of the Obama administration. It's not so much for Romney, who is himself a big government Republican. Let me be very clear. And I, as an independent, have told you that I am an immigrant son. I was not born a conservative, but I was made into one by the leftist establishment that determined that my birthright was irrelevant. But I don't want to go into a story about me. I want to go into a story about Obama, who is not only the most corrupt president in modern American history, but the most divisive. Do you know of a president who has divided America as deeply as this presidency has? Tell me who it was. Tell me who. I know. Nixon and Spiro Agnew. Well, maybe you're right. So two wrongs make a right, is that it? So we have the most divisive president in modern American history. Do you remember what happened on December 31, 2011, when most Americans were celebrating New Year's Eve? Let me remind you. Chapter 2, Trickle-Down Tyranny, documented. Barack Obama signed into law legislation that spelled out his power as president of the United States to detain any U.S. citizen indefinitely on the grounds that he or she might be a terrorist. The National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, which the president had earlier promised to veto, represents the single most egregious rollback of American civil liberties in our nation's history. Obama made the move under cover of America's New Year's Eve party. Even the normally supine ACLU and human rights leftists were stunned by the naked tyranny of the president signing this bill into law. Now, Obama insisted that the reason he signed the bill was to guarantee funding for the military to support our troops. But in the process, he deprived U.S. citizens of the very freedom for which our military is fighting. In fact, despite his insistence to the contrary, it was the president himself who had fought for the right of the commander-in-chief to detain American citizens. Obama was outed by radical leftist legislator Carl Levin, who explained what the president was up to on the floor of the Senate. Levin made it clear that the White House had pushed for the law to be applied indiscriminately to American citizens. Should you care about that? I don't know. Should you care about that? Well, it doesn't apply to you. You're not a terrorist. Why should you care? It's only who? Well, I don't know. Guys with... Well, you don't know who it is. It could be anybody, right? Do you understand this? Indefinite detention? Violation of habeas corpus? In 3 years, he made rapid progress toward bringing the United States under his despotic rule. He only stopped during the campaign. And while America remains blissfully unaware of what this man is doing, this man has accumulated power and authority over every aspect of our lives. This last affront must be the final subversive act we allow Barack Obama to commit. It must be the last time we allow him to strip our country of the guarantees provided in the Constitution Barack Obama not only does not believe in, but continually ignores as he takes us closer and closer to his goal of state control of the country. The president's assault on liberty brings up an important question. Do average Americans have anything to fear if Barack Obama and his cronies retain power after the 2012 elections? In Trickle Down Tyranny, I presented the evidence that you haven't seen anywhere else. America's future hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. While there may not be time to save the tooth, we the people can stop the infection of corruption and power madness that is going on all around us. I'll pause right here. Or shall I go on? I think I'll go on. The most corrupt administration in our history, page 25. As I've told you over and over on my radio show, Barack Obama is presiding over the most corrupt administration in this country's history. He has brought Chicago-style politics to Washington. Let me give you an idea of some of the things that he's done that you won't hear from the mainstream media. Now I'll talk about the vote counting. You know who they are? SCYTL, a vote processing company based in Spain, and this comprises the process and compromised the process of vote counting enormously. Instead of producing election results traceable at the precinct level, votes will now be transmitted to a central server where they will be counted. The problem is that once the votes are merged, it will be impossible to go back and check their integrity at the local level. Did you know that the Obama administration sold the rights to processing our election results to the private company? Did you know that this critical component of free elections will now be handled not by individual precincts, but by a company over which we'll have little control? See, SOE was a U.S. elections results processing company, but it was sold recently under the Obama administration to SCYTL, a socialist company based in Spain, partly funded by none other than the arch evil devil, in my opinion, George Soros, whose puppet currently occupies the White House. Did you know that both Barack and Michelle Obama voluntarily gave up their law licenses and are not permitted to practice law in the United States of America? Do you know why? It's the same sort of voluntary surrender that Bill Clinton made after he lied under oath. Tonight is the case against Obama. What policy, act, or omission convinced you to vote against him? This is the Savage Nation. Last Chance Saloon. 400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be back.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, flag or sleeve all deep. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday.
It is the case against Obama tonight. An election really about rejecting the insane spending, the socialist policies, the corruption and graft of this administration. It is not so much for Romney, who is himself a big government Republican. It is against the most divisive, corrupt administration in my lifetime. And so let me begin with a fact that even leftists can't deny. The U.S. per person debt is now 35% higher than that of Greece. The U.S. per person debt is now 35% higher than that of Greece. U.S. per person debt is now 35% higher than that of Greece. $53,000 per person. Italy, $41,000 per person. Greece, $39,000 per person. France, $37,000 per person. Spain, $26,000 per person. Portugal, $23,000 per person. So where did America's debt come from? Well, from Obama. Obama. Where did it come from? U.S. debt is $53,000 for every man, woman, and child, compared to $39,000 for every man, woman, and child in Greece. What more do I have to tell you than we have a madman in the White House? A man who has spent us into an almost eternal trough that we cannot come out of. Now, the fools will say that Bush did it to us. Bush left us with $1 trillion debt. It's now $4 trillion. Where did $3 trillion go? In the pockets of his cronies. U.S. per person debt now 35% higher than that of Greece. That alone should have you vote for Romney. No other reason. Period. End of story. One other fact before I go into my policy act or omission that convince you to vote against them and read from Trickle-Down Tyranny. What's the deal with Ohio? Why do you constantly hear about the importance of Ohio? How did Ohio become so important? Why is Ohio the biggest thing? Because at the moment, it seems difficult for Mitt Romney to be elected without winning Ohio. Why? Because Obama entered the election with a safe state advantage. He began the election all but guaranteed to win states that contain 237 electors in the Electoral College. Romney started with only 190 electors guaranteed, including Missouri. See, Ohio has 18 electors, which means if Obama wins Ohio, he'll already be at 255 electors. which is only 15 shy of what he needs to be elected president of the United States of America. In 2000, Al Gore received approximately 500,000 more votes than G.W. Bush. But as you may remember, Bush became president. There are many, many ways that Romney could pick up these electors. He could win Florida. Romney could win New Hampshire and Virginia. He could win Iowa and Wisconsin. If Romney loses Ohio, though, he can only afford to lose at best one or two more swing states, and thus the importance of Ohio. It was Ohio that the Democrat machine used to steal the election from my political hero and give it to the corrupt Democrat at the time. It's always Ohio, isn't it? Not the land of milk and honey. No, the land of something else. On a big lake adjacent to Canada. And the reason I mention that is because it has a long history with prohibition and smuggling of alcohol, as do many of the other states in that area. And somehow they can't kick their connection to those horrible days of Al Capone. For some reason, there's a connection to those days, as distant as they may seem. So let me continue in my case against Obama. And I'm not going to read you the whole book, but I'm going to continue with some of the big points from Trickle Down Tyranny. Shall I continue? Tyranny of a naked Marxist presidency, the first socialist lady. Not allowed to say that. Not allowed to say one word about Michelle Obama, are we? You don't remember the petty dictator, Michelle Obama? You remember when Barack and Michelle celebrated the halfway mark of the schoolboy president's junior year in office with a trip to Martha's Vineyard? The vacation in which Michelle and Barack took separate flights cost taxpayers tens of thousands of unnecessary dollars. Michelle ordered up a separate military jet for herself and her entourage, arriving about 4 hours earlier than her husband, who flew in on Air Force One along with the family dog, Bo. You think the deficit came from nothing? This was not the first time the First Lady and the First Kids had traveled separately from the president for no good reason. Do you remember in December 2010? Michelle left early for the family's Hawaii vacation at an extra cost of $100,000 to you, the taxpayer. Her Martha's Vineyard trip capped Michelle Obama's two-and-a-half-year, $10 million vacation spending spree that included five-star hotels, massages, and top-shelf wines and liquors. Calculations on that Michelle spent at least 42 days on vacation from the fall of 2010 to the fall of 2011. She was described by someone as a getaway junkie. Yes, the First Lady is in good company. You remember Imelda Marcos, wife of Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos? She set the standard for lavish spending by a dictator's spouse by owning 3,000 pairs of shoes. First Lady Michelle Obama is our own Imelda Marcos, keeping alive the tradition that dictators' wives should spend the money collected from their citizens lavishly on things that demonstrate their superiority to common people, but like our foreign policy, have nothing to do with our national interest. It cost U.S. taxpayers more than $500,000 to send Michelle and her daughters, who were listed as senior staff, on the trip manifest. Did you know that? Along with the First Lady's mother, niece, nephew, hairstylist, and makeup artist, on an African safari that was billed as government business. Did you know that the U.S. is being sued over this secret family outing? Oh, I can go on and on, but you forgot all of that. You forgot about the most expensive vacation junket yet, a Hawaii trip estimated that cost near $4 million in 2011. The president and the first lady again traveled separately, with Michelle racking up $100,000 in personnel travel, and security expenses, while the president, the green president, flying in on Air Force One at a cost of $181,000 an hour, spent more than $3 million by the time he completed the nine-hour trip. But more than the abuse of taxpayers' money, there's the first family's attitude toward our country, which, again, you have forgotten. There's been a national amnesia about Michelle Obama. Do you remember that Michelle Obama, how she revealed with five words just how great her and her husband's lack of respect, really their indeed contempt for America is, while attending a 9/11 memorial ceremony at the World Trade Center in which the American flag was folded? In the traditional manner, the first socialist lady rolled her eyes and said to her husband, "All this over a flag?" To which Barack Obama grinned and nodded his head in agreement. That sarcastic contempt for everything American, everything truly democratic, carries over into her political views. She's in favor of having schools feed our children, because the kids spend half their waking hours in schools, and schools shape the choices they're going to make for the rest of their lives. You see, Michelle is in agreement with Marx and Engels, who favored eliminating the role of the family in raising children. Michelle argues that the government should provide clear, actionable guidance to families on how to increase physical activity, improve nutrition, and reduce screen time. Sounds good, doesn't it? In other words, her supposed campaign against obesity is nothing more than an excuse to have the state take over the raising of America's children. Why do I call his administration trickle-down tyranny? Like King George III, Obama has become a despot, trampling on the rights of individuals and state governments. And I went through this list, interestingly enough, and I went through the founder's definition of a tyrant, and I then compared it to the Obama administration. It was a very interesting literary trick that I used in trickle-down tyranny. Shall I read you a few? No, you'll read it yourself after the election, unless the book is burned in a giant pyre after the election. Because after all, you can't have books that criticize a perfect being, can you? I mean, if a man is perfect, why would you permit anyone to criticize him? The words of our founders ring true today. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Does that not define your man, Barack Hussein Obama? I think I have proved to you on this show and in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, that Obama is a tyrant in every sense of the word. He defied the will of the people as they expressed it in the resounding defeats they administered to Democrats in the 2010 midterm elections. I'm going to harp on that for a moment. Do you remember that there were elections in 2010? Do you remember that was a repudiation of his socialist big government spending policies? Do you remember what happened in 2010? The vermin in the media would have you have collective amnesia and forget that there has been an election after this dictator was elected in 2008. Do you remember in 2010 what happened? Do you remember he was repudiated at almost every level in every election? You remember the midterm elections? He ignored the pleas of the American people after those elections. He shrugged off the rulings of state and federal court judges. He went so far as to mock and insult the Supreme Court of the United States in the 2011 State of the Union speech. Do you remember that? Do you remember what he did to the Supreme Court? You remember he threatened them? Do you remember he defied the attempts of Congress to shut down his illegal maneuvers? Yes, my friends, the case against Obama grows. It grows and it grows. The time is late. Time is short. 300 pages, trickle-down tyranny. One after the other. One insult after the other. All documented. Advice to the next president. Yes, my friends, it's really advice to the Americans who are not sure. The case against Obama continues, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America, right here on The Savage Nation. Welcome back to The Savage Nation, the Last Chance Saloon. If you haven't made up your mind, listen carefully. Listen carefully as I continue on my case against Obama and then make up your own mind. Taxation, death and taxes, it is said. Something we are all guaranteed, death and taxes. But how much taxation? And what about taxation without representation? Without representation? Well, that's what led to the first American Revolution, wasn't it? Well, Obama's Leninist tactics have continued with his seizure of American wealth, although his method of seizing property is less direct than that of Lenin's. You understand that? Obamacare. You have no idea what it's going to do to families, do you? Now, you ask yourself, how does he get away with it? The answer is NBC, MSNBC. I'm going to give you one example of how this works. I'm going to give you one example. When you keep asking yourself, how does a gutter rat like Al Sharpton wind up with a television show? How do such sneering, sophomoric losers have a television show? How do the stenographers who pose as journalists in the new Obama government media complex get their jobs? The answer is quite simple. Let's focus on General Electric, the parent company of NBC and MSNBC. In a blatant payback to GE for its political support of the president's policies, Obama appointed the president of GE, Jeffrey Immelt, as job czar, head of the President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. It sounds good, doesn't it? Do you know what he did? Do you know what Immelt did? Immelt's business dealings favor China over the U.S. And the president's appointment of Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric actually helped China gain a competitive advantage in its economic war with the United States. It is a reward for political crony General Electric, whose political lobbying arm, GPAC, donated $2.4 million to Democrats in order to get cap-and-trade legislation passed. Now, why did they want cap-and-trade legislation passed? As one GE executive's email explained, quote, if this bill is enacted into law, it would benefit many GE businesses. With the bill set to impose new greenhouse gas emission standards for aircraft engines, and with GE being one of the primary companies in America producing the engines, the benefits were obvious. In addition, GE received $75 million in taxpayer money to build smart meters that remotely monitor electric power use. That's just petty ante stuff, right? So Obama appoints the head of GE as job czar, and then the job czar, Amel, strikes a deal with the Chi-Coms to manufacture jet engines in China, putting American aviation know-how into the hands of our biggest creditor and one of our strongest economic and military foes. This treasonous technology transfer followed Immelt's announcement that he was moving GE's 115-year-old X-ray business headquarters from Wisconsin to Beijing as part of GE's Spring Wind Initiative to develop more medical products and services in China. GE's investment of $2 billion in China included hiring 65 engineers and additional support staff in its new China facility. Now, I'm going to go on with this for another moment because you kept hearing that CEOs are saying we should pay more taxes, but it doesn't apply to their companies. How about old smiling boy himself, the sweater wearer, the nice guy, Bill Gates? Old Bill Gates. Well, it seems Bill Gates took lessons from Immelt. Gates, as I wrote the book, Trickle Down Tyranny, was in discussions with the China Nuclear Corporation to have his company, TerraPower, locate a manufacturing facility in China and cooperatively develop Generation 4 nuclear power reactors in China. Under job czar Immelt's leadership, GE laid off 21,000 of its American workers and closed 20 of its factories from 07 to 09. Less than half of GE's workforce remains in the U.S. The stenographers who pose as journalists in the new Obama government media complex never bothered to question either Immelt's appointment as job czar or the transfer to China of the very jobs he was supposed to protect. I'll go on. But you see, GE is not alone. I'm not just picking on them because they have such sophomoric idiots as talkers. No, Immelt and GE aren't alone in their ability to evade taxes. If you think I'm picking on the small guy, you're wrong. Dozens of other companies, from PG&E to Wells Fargo, paid no federal taxes for the past 3 years. Did you know that? You didn't read it in your local San Francisco newspaper, did you? Did you know that Wells Fargo also received a number of tax subsidies? Hewlett-Packard, Yahoo, and Levi Strauss paid taxes at less than half the 35% corporate tax rate. Why? They're in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. In all the companies listed for tax avoidance, in a report issued by the Citizens for Tax Justice, they received more than $200 billion in taxpayer-funded subsidies. Oh, yeah, I believe that they should pay their fair share, don't you? Don't you? I've given you some companies. I've given you the references in Tyranny of the Treasurer and Trickle-Down Tyranny. You understand any of this? Well, I'll go on. I'll go on. There's an awful lot more to be covered here tonight in the case against Obama. Tyranny of the Treasurer, great chapter. It's worthy of study. Tyranny of Obama's radical accomplices, it's an entire chapter. You know nothing about it because the stenographers called journalists don't want you to know anything about it. They're not journalists. They're stenographers of the Obama administration. Red October 2011, Obama's communist revolution. Oh, yeah. What was that? What was I talking about? October 2011 marked the emergence into the public eye of the second Bolshevik revolution. This one in the United States of America, egged on by our first communist president. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Did you see the indicators of this revolution? The Occupy Wall Street mob of young, indoctrinated anti-capitalist students and other malcontents? The gangs of union thugs trashing the Wisconsin Capitol in the spring of 2011? The flash mobs of disaffected youths using cell phones and social media to organize raids to steal merchandise from American small businesses? What does it have to do with Obama? Well, what you don't know is the people who make Barack Obama's inner circle a complete circle are lifetime leftist agitators. From David Axelrod to Rahm Emanuel to George Soros, they are proponents of mob rule in order to speed up their plans for assuming total power. To hear them tell it, their target is the rich. In fact, the rich have nothing to fear from this administration. when the administration comes out in support of the Occupy Wall Street mob against the banks, they're merely deflecting attention from their true purpose. In fact, it was Wall Street that put Obama in power in the first place, as I showed you in Trickle Up Poverty. So why don't the people on Wall Street care that Obama is supporting the rabble as they demonstrate against the banks, against capitalism in general? Because Obama's supposed tax the rich plan won't touch them. It's not aimed at the truly rich, the people with multi-million dollar a year incomes and salaries that would make you and me blush. It's aimed at the small businessmen and women who employ 15 or 250 or 700 people. The everyday American entrepreneurs who make a good living and provide jobs for Americans, but who are anything but rich. That's the point, my friends. Do you think Warren Buffett is worried about paying income tax? Buffett, one of the richest men in America, earned nearly $63 million in 2010, about of which $40 million was taxable. He paid less than $7 million to the IRS, a 17.4% tax rate. He's advocating that people who make $1 million annually be taxed at the highest rate. And Obama is going to take that definition of millionaire down to people earning $200,000 annually as a family. You see, Obama was elected on the backs of hedge fund operators who made more than $1 million betting, $1 trillion, betting against the U.S. economy in 08. So if you're looking for assets to seize, that's where we should start, with the hedge fund barons, in large part because they bet against the housing market in the crash before the 08 election. American people lost their homes. The hedge fund operators gained their fortunes at the people's expense. And they haven't stopped ripping us off either. Page 100 of Trickle Down Tyranny. Educate yourself. It's all you've got. The $2 trillion hedge fund industry outperformed the S&P 500 stock index for the first 8 months of 2011. I'm not going to read you every detail. I'm going to go on. I'm going to tell you more of the facts so you can make up your mind tomorrow. Mob rule. The Occupy Wall Street protest, the thuggery of the unions. Oh, the thuggery of the unions. My God, how far we have fallen. My God, we have fallen so far. Tyranny of Obama's corporate cronies. Czars belong in Russia. I'm reading the headlines now because you're probably getting tired. I know many of you want to dash off and turn the dial. You've been listening now for an hour and 45 minutes. You intended to listen for 15 minutes. But your wife couldn't stop listening, so you started listening. Now you can't believe it. And so Michael Savage said, well, I'm going to devote tonight the case against Obama. And I'm doing it the best I can with all of the facts that I have at my fingertips with references in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, which I spent over a year compiling and writing. Now, if you don't like the facts, that's too bad. But they're facts, nevertheless. Obama's cabinet, tax cheats, dupes, and double agents. Eric Holder, remember him? How he got away with Fast and Furious? Yeah, you forgot about that, huh? How about Leon Panetta? Old Leon Panetta, who conveniently lost ballots for soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen. Old Leon Panetta, who is he? Where'd he come from? Who is this guy? Leon Panetta may share more than just the first name with Leon Trotsky, the infamous communist who helped form the Soviet Union. After the bloody revolution of 1917. Disturbing new evidence surfaced that Panetta, Obama's first CIA director, now Secretary of Defense, may have had a decades-long relationship with Hugh DeLacy, a member of the Executive Committee of the Communist Party USA, with known connections to Soviet agents, including Victor Perlow of the infamous Perlow Spy Group and Frank Coe and Solomon Adler of the equally infamous Silver Master Spy Group. DeLacy is also associated with suspected Soviet agent John Stewart, service of the Amerasia spy case. Reference 22 of Tyranny of Obama's Corporate Cronies. You don't know any of this. You don't know who Panetta is, that he was tied to the Institute for Policy Studies, a well-known pro-Soviet think tank based in Washington, D.C. The Institute for Policy Studies vigorously opposed Reagan's plans to topple the Soviet-backed Sandinista junta in Nicaragua. Panetta strongly agreed with the Institute and even pushed in Congress for a normalization of diplomatic relations with communist Nicaragua. I know many of you can't take it this late at night. You can't believe this. You're overloaded. You don't know that our president appointed Panetta, first to the CIA and then to the Defense Department, and you're wondering why so many strange things are happening in this country, don't you? They don't happen by themselves, my friend. Things don't move in the middle of the night by themselves. Militaries don't get cut in the middle of the night by itself. Planes don't fall out of the sky with military ballots by themselves. Ballots don't get sent in a week after the election by accident, my friends. It is all by design. Panetta was tied to the Institute for Policy Studies. Look it up. Panetta, as a congressman, had a disturbingly pro-Soviet record. He pushed measures to make the USSR and its Eastern European satellite countries into more favored nations and trade agreements. He voted in favor of turning over the Panama Canal to the government of Panama, which is then an ally of the Soviet Union. He opposed America's defense pact with Taiwan on the ground that Taiwan acted as a check against communist China. Do you want to know more about it, or you had enough? And what did Panetta think about DeLacy, who met with a string of notorious Soviet and Chinese communist spies? Panetta stood up at DeLacy's 1993 funeral and gave a long speech praising this communist. He even saw to it that favorable remarks about DeLacy were placed into the congressional record. There are so many things that you don't know because of the stenographers called journalists that it falls upon men like me to dig these up. Do you know about the union-approved head of General Motors, Dan Akerson? You know who he is? Do you know anything about Akerson? Do you know about General Motors actually losing money rather than making money? Do you know about the modern-day Dreyfus affair that has gone on under Obama? Well, you don't want to know about ancient history, so I won't tell you about ancient history. We'll talk about modern history. Kickbacks for Obama's cronies, that's something you would have read in a newspaper in my day. Would have been a screaming headline in the Daily News, 1950s, 60s. Kickbacks for Obama's cronies discovered, but not with the stenographers who are now wholly owned by the tax-avoiding corporations that own newspapers. I'll be right back.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
There was a four-year civil war in America where hundreds of thousands of people died, fighting over many things. Slavery was one of the things. But did you know that in the border states, brothers and cousins, even fathers and sons, often took opposite sides and found themselves in antagonistic armies? Did you know that? I don't know if you know that. Lincoln thought that his side was 100% right. He stood for union. He stood for the white peace of America. He was opposed to slavery. But what you don't know about Lincoln is that slavery was a secondary issue. His primary purpose in the Civil War and in pursuing it and causing this division was economic. I don't think you understand that it was about an economic war and the slavery was an add-on to Lincoln. He himself said that he opposed slavery, but slavery was a secondary issue to Lincoln. This is something that is not taught in the history textbooks. But we don't have to talk about that because that would be considered too difficult for a... How about the great days of the Arabs? How about one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the history of the human species? How about that? Shall we talk about how the Muslims were stopped only by warfare? How they tried to take the world over and almost did so in 25 years? Did you know about that? Did you know anything about that? Or you thought it was always a religion of peace? You heard that the Crusades, the Christian Crusades, you heard about. That's because you were brainwashed into hearing about only the Crusades. But what you don't know is that the Christian Crusades were counter-Crusades against Muslim invasions. That you don't know. Well, I could tell you that story. The Byzantine army being smashed at the Battle of the Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River in 634. You want to hear about that? You want to hear about the Muslims overrunning most of the world in only 25 years? How they took over Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, each city falling almost without resistance to the Muslims, and most of the populations of these regions going over to Islam. And then the Muslims turned east. The Persians found a great general in Rustam. They had a great, great army with a force of elephants. And for 3 days they fought the Arabs at Qadisiyah in 637, and at last the army broke and they ran. Then the conquest of Persia followed. You know, you hear that Persia is a Muslim nation, but you don't know they were not always Persians. And the conquest of Persia followed, and the Muslim empire pushed far into western Turkestan and went eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, who were filled with a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of their one book, the Quran, who then wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library. Yes, the Muslims burnt the Alexandria Library to the ground. Sound familiar? What happened next? The Muslim tide of conquest next poured along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar and into Spain. Spain was invaded by the Muslims in 710. The Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arabs reached almost the center of France, but then something happened. That's right, something happened in France. Here, the Muslims were stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers, and the Muslims were thrown back as far as the Pyrenees again. And I could go on and on, but in only 25 years, the relentless Muslim attacks continued, and the Arabs almost conquered the entire world. But it was stopped. It was stopped by warfare only. Unfortunately, you don't understand why Bush went into Iraq. Unfortunately, many of you don't understand anything about what wars we are fighting or why we are fighting them. Unfortunately, you don't understand that there are 50 conflicts on the globe right now, and almost every one of the conflicts consists of Muslims not getting along with their neighbors. That's because the so-called progressives in the news business have a different agenda than you do. And we can talk about that. We could talk about the positive sides of the Muslim invasion if you want, because there are some. We can talk about how the excited Arabic mind, which is a phenomenal mind, the Arab intelligence is well known and incredible, and how the Arab mind, once it conquered, moved across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than had the Greek mind 1,000 years before it. That the whole Western world, or actually almost the whole world west of China, was stimulated by the Arab mind. And that broke up old ideas and developments of new ones that came along after the conquests. And how the active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion actually integrated and pollinated with the Arab mind of Spain. And how it gave a great flowering to ideas and learning. And how in Central Asia, the Arabs met the Buddhists. And how the Arab mind or the Muslim mind met the Buddhist mind. And then there were material achievements of Chinese civilization. And how the Arab learned the manufacture of paper from the Chinese, and that made printed books possible. And finally, the Arab Muslims came into touch with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And very soon, something interesting happened. The intolerance and the self-sufficiency of the early Muslims, which made them believe the Quran was the only book that was necessary, was dropped. And learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. By the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the whole Arabized world. By the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were corresponding with learned men in Cairo. What I'm getting at is the throwback Islamists that we are facing around the globe right now actually predate the 9th century Arab mind. They are not even at the level of their 9th century ancestors. They're somewhere around the 7th or 8th century of early Islam. And you find this in America amongst the prisoners or criminals who convert to Islam in jail. These are usually ignorant men who have had no education whatsoever. They give them the holy roller language in jail. They give them an outfit and a book, and they tell them this is the only book they need, and they go out and they try to convert others. Eventually in time, as these men become more knowledgeable and more worldly and more educated, they will cease being as fanatic, and the world might benefit from some of their native intelligence. Unfortunately, that is a long time in the future. Right now, we are facing too many people in too many mosques, both in America and the world, who are going out thinking that only the Quran is necessary to survive in the world, and that the self-sufficiency of this one book shall carry them through the ages. As I say, these men are not even at the level of the 9th century Muslims who predated them. This is one man's pocket view of history. My name is Michael Savage. I think that I'm the elder statesman of conservative talk radio. I actually didn't believe it, but I've reached that point. I'm giving myself a title. I know that I'm a national phenomenon in many ways, but I am the elder statesman. Most of the guys are 20 years younger than me, which is fine. And some of them are good, but most of them don't even understand what this country has come from. They kind of read about it. But as much as I hate to admit it, in a way, I've lived through it. From Eisenhower to Obama in two generations. From Ben Casey to Nurse Jackie in two generations. From mutual assured destruction to assured national destruction, two generations. From Evan Rude to Always Rude in two generations. From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in two generations. From I Spy to I Cry in two generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely in two generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in two generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in two generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in two generations. Starlets to harlots. Preachers to breachers. Athletes to sexleets. Rabbis to sandflies. Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts. Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts. From the Eagle to the Beagle in two generations. From LSD to ADD. From Cardigans to Partykins. From Cub Scouts to Scouting Cubs. From Aspirin to OxyContin. From Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane. From Science to Lie-Ince. From Law to Claw. From Zip Guns to Machine Guns. From Manhattans to Cosmos. From Red Book to Spread Books. From Acorn the Tree to Acorn the Spree. From Babies to Puppies. From Guppies to Yuppies. From Private Vets to Private Jets. From Soldiers Who Kill to Soldiers Without Will. From Lassie to Sassy. From Religion to Pigeons. From Eons to Peons. From Rapists to Offenders. From Stickball to Speedballs. From Gallo to Lafitte. From Matus to Chartreuse. From Milltown to Prozac. From the Air Force to a Bear Force. From the Navy to Loose Gravy. From the Army to I'm Swami. From Israel to Fizreal. From Taiwan to Spizwan. From the Dragon and the Eagle to the Dragon and the Beagle. From Dragsters to Drag Queens. From Redwoods to Deadwoods. From Health Foods to Wealth Foods. From Heroes to Zeros. From UFOs to IOUs. From Hirsute to Lawsuit. From Melarolls to Melanine. From Niagara to Viagra. From Coney Island to Survival Island. From the Five Families to the Sly Families. From Al Capone to Sly Stallone. From Ike to Spikes. Truman to Untruman. Truman to Untruman. From Truman to the Untruman. From Reagan to Swayman. Rayburn to Pelosi. From the Eagle to the Beagle. From the Bible to the Legal. That's the story of America the Great to America that Greats.
Nobody's come across the border in a long time. I mean, we spend a fortune on technology, and if you want to come to America illegally, don't waste your time going across the border and through the desert. It's dangerous. Just get in an airplane. Fly here and overstay your visa. We have absolutely no ability to check who you are and get you back. So, and the total number of undocumented in this country has been going down for a long time.
I was re-listening to that tape when he and Fox News were talking about the wonders of illegal immigrants in America. In a closed meeting of some kind, both Bloomberg and Moloch want more and more illegal aliens, which is their right to want illegal aliens. They're entitled to be on the side of criminals. It's okay. But to lie about it like this and think no one is listening and you're not going to get caught is quite astonishing to me. So Mayor Bloomberg says, number one, nobody has come across the border in a long time. That is factually false. In other words, either he didn't know that or he's stupid or he lives in his own world. I don't know. He also says that most of them contribute to society. He's wrong. A report by the Center for Immigration Studies, citing U.S. Census data, showed that 43% of immigrants, both illegal and legal, who have been living in the U.S. for at least 20 years, were on welfare. Welfare. 43% of immigrants, legal and illegal, who've been living in the U.S. for at least 20 years are living on welfare, Mayor. Then he goes on and says most of them aren't coming here illegally. Law, he's wrong about that as well. We have to talk about this. I know it's boring, but the fact of the matter is he's wrong. In 2011 alone, Border Patrol, a component of the Department of Homeland Security, apprehended 327,577 illegals. How could Bloomberg not know this at the end of fiscal year 2010? DHS had attained effective control of 873 of the estimated 2,000-mile-long southwest border. But now they don't want to have any control of the border. So I have a question for the audience. I guess it's kind of unbelievable to me. How could anyone as ignorant of reality as Bloomberg, how could he be so rich? Bloomberg is more worried about Tea Party members than about illegal aliens and terrorists, it seems to me. I could go from my normal exposure of idiots in high places. And by the way, that covers both sides of the aisle, mainly on the liberal side of the aisle, because most of them are on the, I would say most of them are on the take. By what I see in San Francisco, this is the most corrupt renegade gang I've ever seen in my life. The San Francisco Sacramento gang that is running California into the poorhouse, they have raped and robbed this country. They have raped and robbed this state. They are raping San Francisco. They're tearing it to shreds with a tunnel to nowhere. And nobody seems to know how to stop them. So if you like a one-party system, and you think that you're a Democrat, you're mistaken. You're something other than a Democrat if you're cheering a one-party system. Take a look at the one-party system here in California, and you can tell me that they're doing the right thing here. The state is a disaster zone. And why is it a disaster zone? Because they own the newspapers. Even the Los Angeles Times, as liberal as it is, shocked me the other day when they wrote an article that the, who did they say, the teachers union, the California Teachers Union, claims that they own the state and they run the state and that Jerry Brown is their stooge. The California Teachers Association says that they have more power than Jerry Brown and he's just their stooge. That's right. He's not elected. There's some guy at the CTA who they all go to for his opinion on anything. The state is ripped to shreds. What would you like to talk about? Here's another topic that caught my eye, and I'm not, you know, just pulling your leg. Let me, ask myself a very difficult question. And I got to ask it of the audience because it happens. What would you do if you had a terminal illness? I believe that committing suicide is perhaps the most violent act you can commit. I don't know of a more violent act. In fact, if you're a religious person, I don't think you understand this because religion has been so beaten up in America. Most people don't know that suicide is against all of the world's major religions. Because God owns you, you don't own you. I know that's anathema to most people. Don't believe they own themselves. What God? They are God. Everyone's a demigod. But to the five principal religions on earth, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism, suicide is about the worst crime you can commit. It is not acceptable to any religion. It's one of the great stabilizing influences of religion, as are many of the rules of religion, incidentally. But don't tell that to the progressives who are, you know, oh, that's a whole separate story. Don't get me started on progressives. They're not progressives. They're sort of primitivists, retrogressives, whatever you want to call it. There's no progress in the progressive movement whatsoever. It's a nice word for communism. It's a nice word for what is yours is mine and what is mine is mine. It's a nice word for taking from others what they don't have themselves. But I don't want to talk about progressives as much as I want to talk about what would you do if you had were diagnosed with a terminal illness. Would you kill yourself? You think that would help your family? There are a couple of other stories out there. We're talking about Bloomberg and Murdoch and illegals. Now, why would Murdoch want illegal aliens in America? I could see in a way why Bloomberg wants as many illegals in the city. He needs them as kitchen workers, domestic workers, factory workers. I don't think there are many factories left. Immigrants always vote for liberal Democrats. I'll be right back. When the lights go down in the city. So Bloomberg is a demagogue, pretended to be a conservative, but he's a liberal, certainly for sure. Which to me is a dirty word. Yes, it is a dirty word. Liberalism is a dirty word because of what it's done and what it is doing to this country. That's right. That's how I see it. One man's opinion. Take it for what it is. I can't change my viewpoints. It's my religious upbringing combined with my social experiences, combined with my life experiences, which have given me my opinions, and I'm entitled to them. I don't owe you an explanation. However, if you would like one, or if you'd like to comment on anything that I have mentioned, from the subway to nowhere in San Francisco to the number of illegal aliens that were captured at the border, despite Bloomberg's protestations to the contrary, to the suicide question. If you were diagnosed with inoperable cancer or some other horrendous terminal illness, would you jump off a bridge in order to spare your family the pain? That does not make sense to me. It does not make sense to me. What would you do? I'm asking you, the listener, whatever you're doing right now, you know, it's a big country with a lot of listeners all over the country. Well, maybe you don't want to think about a negative story like this. People accuse me of being negative. You know, I actually resent being called negative when I don't create the news. I report the news in my own way. I discuss the news and the scandals in my own way. I don't actually create the scandals. San Francisco is now enmeshed in one of the greatest scandals in the 21st century. The subway to nowhere, the central subway. Billions and billions of dollars for no reason whatsoever. It's one of the most phenomenal stories of our time. You have no idea what's going on around you. This man has turned it into a petty dictatorship. And God forbid Obama wins again, you're going to have a full-blown South American tyranny in this country as sure as I'm sitting here. It's not just one guy versus the other. It's not just one style versus another. It's disaster versus survival. Period. That it's a gang, an illegitimate gang that's destroying the country. But let's go back. The suicide story. What would you do is the question. If, God forbid, you had a cancer diagnosis, and I'm talking terminal. Many people with cancer are surviving today, which is beautiful. And they're surviving well. I mean, I know some people myself, 2-3 people, I'm shocked. It was not when I was a kid. It was a death sentence as a kid, when I was a kid. You got cancer, they whispered about it like divorce. Do you know that? It's crazy. When I was a kid, people whispered they were getting a divorce. They go, she got a divorce. They were divorced. That's how they talked about it. Oh, yes, they have cancer. I mean, they whispered about these things. Not anymore. Not anymore. Well, anyway, I'll take your calls. I will take your calls here on the Savage Nation. Let's begin on the West Coast, move ourselves to the East. Now, change it around. Steve, go ahead, please.
Society is getting so sick and so degenerate now that in the media, we glorify people who take their own lives, and we treat it as, and teach our children that it's somehow an acceptable option. What a message to send. It all goes with that same progressive liberal point of view.
Well, that's right. They're anti-life. That's why they kill the unborn, and that's why they glorify the mass murderer. This is something I'll never understand about the so-called liberal who has a halo around his own head. They will keep a man on death row for 40 years, a mass murderer, the most horrible person, but they have no qualms about killing the unborn. How does that work?
Well, Mike, they even teach our children in the media, in the movies, and on, you know, and whatever show, that if life is getting too hard, well, hey, you have options, and that may include taking your own life. How sick,
well, but
Mike.
Again, this comes from the liberal progressive ethos, if you wish to call it that. As you well know, in Northern Europe, they are now permitting people as young as 14 years of age to commit suicide, or they are giving them the option of euthanasia if they're depressed or unhappy. Yes, it's reported. Children as young as 14 have been approved for euthanasia in progressive Finland, I believe. Or was it progressive Denmark? And so progressivism is the death of humanity. We understand that. But let's go back to the nuts and bolts. God forbid you had a diagnosis like that. What would you do?
Mike, I would savor and live every day like it was my last day, and I would not deny my loved ones a second of my time by destroying them by taking my own life prematurely.
All right, well, that's your position. What if you're in pain? What if you're racked with such pain you can't enjoy another second of life? What are you going to do then? What are you going to do then? Well, there is Bromley's mixture, which I know is available in England. I've talked about it. It's a phenomenal idea, and why they don't give drugs like that in America is a matter of public policy that needs to be totally changed. I believe if a person has a killing cancer like this, they should be given any drug, legal or illegal, in a hospital setting to allay their pain. And there are drugs that will kill any pain, by the way. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I mean, I don't know. Does anyone really think about these things? If you had terminal cancer, what would you do? Here's another topic I want to ask you about across America. I was stumbling around the internet this morning in a sort of internet stupor. And I stumbled upon this from The Independent in UK. Asexuals, the fourth sexual orientation. Around 1% of the world's population is reckoned to feel no sexual attraction at all. Now, you can give to immediate jokes right off the bat. We can declare, you know, all liberal. No, but that would be crazy. It's not about politics here. But apparently, we see nothing but sex, currency of sex, everywhere you turn. 50% of the internet are sexual, of the sexual nature. And yet there's 1% of the population have a fourth sexual orientation, asexuals. They call it an understudied population. And they say people who are in our society, in very sexualized culture, feel like there's something wrong with them. Asexuality is defined as a complete lack of sexual attraction. There are many, many jokes we can come up with here, but we're not going to do it. There are two forms of people. People who have some level of sex drive, but don't direct this drive towards others, so they may self-pleasure themselves. And other people who have no sex drive whatsoever. We could say they would be all of the, well, let's stop right there because I can tell five jokes in a row. I could ask you, are you asexual? I'd like to hear from someone out there who says, yes, thank God someone has finally talked about that. I thought it's an interesting topic, don't you? Here's another one. Study says less religious states give less to charity. Duh. Of course, Republicans give more to charity. Democrats are cheap. The only charity that Democrats generally give to as a Democrat party. To them, that's the charity. Of the 10 least generous states, 9 voted for the Democrat Barack Obama for president in the last election. By contrast, of the 10 most generous states, 8 voted for Republican John McCain. The most generous state was Utah, where residents gave 10.6% of their discretionary income. Why? Because it's largely Mormon. They're good people. At the bottom of the list, you know where they are. Mainly the butterfly ballot people. I would say Boca Raton would have the lowest donation in the history. The lowest donation of any would be people who live in Boca Raton who steal sweet and low from early bird dinners. I would say that they would be the least. In other words, where Obama is the most popular, you'd have the least giving to any charity. People who earn $200,000 a year give a greater percentage to charity when they live in zip codes with fewer people who are as wealthy as they are. I can't follow all the details. All I know is that Democrats are generally cheap. That's what I found. They tip less, and they give very little except to Democrat causes. They generally drive cheap cars. They have bad teeth, and they have bad shoes. That's what I have found. They look like Larry David after a hangover. If you know, we carry around an image of a person, of a type. So when you say Republican, if you're a progressive, you have an image. I don't know what it is. David Duke, probably. Adolf Hitler with a blonde wig. I have no idea. But to a conservative like myself, when I say progressive liberal, I think of a younger Larry David with very bad teeth, terrible shoes, probably old Birkenstocks that are worn out, that have been resold, and halitosis, if I say progressive. And I know he gives nothing to charity. I mean, intuitively, I would know. Cheap, tipper, like forget about it time. Beverly Hills, nobody probably wants to wait on this guy. Okay, so they don't give. They just don't give. All they do is they give to the Democrat Party. To them, that's the number one charity. That's if you want to move off the terminal illness thing. Today is Monday. Lighten up already. Easy does it. One day at a time. Life is good. People are wonderful. Businesses. Give me a bumper sticker. Give me a car. Give me a car license plate sticker. No one has them anymore except stupid leftover liberals. I see the idiots here in Bay Area of San Francisco still driving around Obama, Biden, 08 to show they're real members of the CPUSA. Oh, yeah, I've been a member of the CPUSA for a long time. It's inherent in my DNA. I'm riding around with that Obama bumper sticker from 2008 to show you how progressive liberal I am. I'm so far out. Obama, Biden, 08. No matter what Biden says, no matter what crookery Obama is accused of or found to have done, Obama, Biden, 08. Right. Cut you off from the right lane, give you the finger. This is to get us off the terminal cancer thing, if you think it's, you know, if it's too hard. So we got a mayor in New York who bans cans of mother's milk, soda, trans fat, salt. And now he wants to flood America with illegal aliens and says that they're not coming over the border anymore. Astounding. Then you have Murdoch, who was so insulting it was frightening. So let's go to the callers. 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 cancer, asexuality. What else do you want to talk about? I mean, I'm mixing it up here. Mix and match. Max and Mitch. Mix and match. Mitch and Max. Match and mix. Have you gone to michaelsavage.com over the weekend and been a good girl? Have you seen the cute picture of me in high school? Did you like the way I looked in high school with my gun? This is my rifle. This is my gun. I'm not allowed to finish that little poem on the show. It's on the bottom of michaelsavage.com. You could see what I was like as a young teenager. Would you have liked me if you were in high school? See me? I said, some head of hair I had on me. Unbelievable. Michael on his high school rifle team from his book, Train Tracks. Yeah, you should. You're going to love that book. I got new pictures in there. The publisher's kind of fooling my picture's not on the book. It's just a picture of a train going through the snow. The number one New York Times bestselling author and superstar radio personality, Michael Savage, is admired by millions of his tough talk and no punches pulled common sense about the state of our unionist leaders. In Train Tracks, a more personal side of Savage shines through in his marvelous collection of American stories for the holidays. Michael Savage's poignant personal stories of home, family, and holidays will resonate with readers everywhere. I hope. Legendary conservative, hardcover, Dr. Savage, the Gorilla Man, no, the Elephant Man is coming out very soon. I'm going to give the elephant guy money. I'm going to get you to give the elephant. Oh, did you see the story about the Gorilla Brothers? Touching. Two brother gorillas were separated a number of years ago by a zoo or whatever, right? They reunited them in some asylum for gorillas. They hugged each other. They kissed each other. They remembered each other. And you don't get mad like I do when you see poachers cutting the hands off mountain gorillas? Any poacher of a mountain gorilla, a hippo, an elephant, should be executed. And it should be put on YouTube and the money raised for anti-poaching squads. Anyone caught doing that to an animal like that should be killed, and they should be put onto YouTube, and the money should be raised for the downloading of it to go for more hunter-killer squads to kill poachers. Look what's going on in this world. Look what's going on in this world with Syria. No one even knows what's going on there. We do know this. He's a monster. But the opposition are going to be as big a monster, if not more of a monster, than him within time. We're going to have Al-Qaeda take over Syria. We're going to have Islamists take over Syria. The Jews and Christians will be slaughtered and driven out of Syria. And you'll say, I didn't know. Hillary Clinton said it was a good thing. So, look, there's a lot of topics out there. Florida, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Ahoy, matey. I'm laying in Iraq.
Ahoy.
I'm in Iraq on my 28 diesel boat, and I'm in the city of Arena. And this is numero uno. I got the low berth from the high and the low, and I sleep here like a baby every single night, like I'm in mommy again.
Bob, what goes on in your life, though, at night? What do you do like when the dusk falls and I'm off the air and you have no one to talk to?
I wish I could have a replay of you, Rattlesnake.
God bless you. See, there's one live guy living on a boat somewhere in America who listens to me. That's fun. Peter, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. My brother and his wife live south of you in Moss Beach. And
yes.
His daughter developed leukemia a little over a year ago. She had chemotherapy about three or four times until they all but killed her, until they found a perfect match, a perfect bone marrow. Actually, it was a blood match. And she right now is doing okay. There are T cells in her body.
Unbelievable. Thank God. No, it's a different world than the automatic death sentence it was even 10 years ago.
Right, but don't give up. That's what I'm saying. My brother said to me, if you ever get cancer and you give up, I will haunt you. He said, I'll haunt you in heaven. And I said, okay. He said, just don't give up. Fight it to the death. And she was all but ready to give up, and they thought she was done for, and it worked.
That's right. Well, that's a beautiful call. I want everyone to listen to that. Now let's go back to the Topulent Jacket 1850 Sailor song.
Because I... young seaman
lay dying, and on his deathbed he lay. To his friends who around him were sighing. I have a friend, I'm not going to say who. He's in perfect health. This and that, but he's good shape. He said to me, if ever he gets debilitated or he gets a diagnosis like this. He has a pill. It'll kill him in seconds that he got years ago from somebody. I don't know from who. He has it in the apartment. I guess it's cyanide, which is almost instantaneous. That's what Hitler, they use in the bunker. A snapperoo on the tooth and you're gone in seconds. You know, it crosses the blood-brain barrier. You're dead. You're brain dead in seconds. If, you know what I mean? I know this is a horrendous topic. Horrible. Horrible topic. You know, am I too negative? Would you rather I just be had a win friends and influence people? Why, be gosh, you vote for them Republicans, and I say we go back to that free market. If only we had that free market, and you know, by gosh, I would say the Republican way is the best way. Why, if every poor person got down there and put on a clean shirt and started a business, and I wouldn't care if it was a lemonade stand, just start from that bottom and, you know, work your way up. That's the way to do it. Oh, yeah, malarkey, malarkey, malarkey. Yeah, I'm not ready for Fox News, if you don't mind. I have a friend, I'm not going to mention who, the last person on earth was diagnosed. When I learned about it, I've not been the same, to be frank with you. I don't know why. I mean, certain people you think, I'm drinking Alsatian white wine at my friend Roger's restaurant, the Chalet Basque up in San Rafael. And I find I can tolerate it, no hangover, so I'm feeling much better. You know, I don't know. Look, is it too negative to talk about it? Because, I mean, we don't have to talk about it if you had a terminal diagnosis of what you would do. I could just be an average talk show host and talk about guys spying on Republicans in the Sea of Galilee. That's a great use of resources under the new fascist dictatorship that Obama has created. That should send a shudder through your spine. You mean Eric Holder's FBI is now watching Republicans? Oh, that's great. Well, we really want a one-party system. Look how well it's working in California with this fascist dictatorship here. Look how well it's working here, sacking the Treasury from San Francisco to Sacramento without a blip on the horizon, because they own the newspapers, they own the radio, they own the political structure, and there's not a peep about what's going on in the state. We don't need a two-party system. That's old-fashioned. That's the old-fashioned America. We need a good, clean, Democrat, socialist dictatorship of the type that Obama would like to recreate in this country. That's what we need. A nice South American dictatorship with a good man on top, of course, not a bad man. Now, of course, to his followers, Chavez is a good man. To his followers, Hitler was a good man. To his followers, Mussolini was a good man. To his followers, Pol Pot was a good man. But you don't understand that yet. You're too politically naive to understand why the two-party system, when it works, it works. When it doesn't work, as in California, the state dies, as it is dying. Dying, 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 died in the wool. Liberals, dying, dying, dying. But don't think I walk around every day worrying about these things. Sometimes I let it get to me, and it eats at me. And sometimes I don't let it get to me, and it doesn't eat at me.
Savage.